All right, welcome back, everyone. We're wrapping up the weekend edition with a replay from a daily editorial that was posted back on Tuesday. I'm replaying this one because we were joined by Brent Cook. It had been a number of months since we had Brent last on the show, so it was a good time to catch back up with Brent and just get more of a sense of where he sees this market set up. This, again, was posted on Tuesday. I hope you all enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that we are chatting with Brent Cook, independent economic geologist, also works with Joe Mazumdar over at Exploration Insights. That's a newsletter that we will link to below. We're a big fan of Joe and Brent's work over at Exploration Insights. Now, Brent, it's been a little while since we last had you on the show, and no point beating around the bush here. Other than the market is continuing to fade, it's a tough market for exploration companies, developers, even the producers across the board. Metals are having a tough go and the stocks continue to drift lower. I want to first get a historical reference from you here, Brent, because there's a lot of people saying this is kind of like the crash or the meltdown when it was happening back in 2012, 2013 timeframe. Then other people are even going further back. There's even some comparisons to the 70s. Brent, broadly, how are you viewing this market? What other times have we seen a market, especially for the metals, as bad as it is now?
Right. Well, thanks for having me on, Corey. I appreciate it. It's been, seems you only call me when it's really ugly out there. Yeah, it's sort of like the, 2013, 15, that era. But more to me, just the valuations and the general disdain for this whole sector reminds me more of 97, 98, 99, when the resource sector was just unloved, unrecognized, unappreciated. Whilst the difference being that at that point the dot-com bubble was soaking up all the money. Right now, given the global economic circumstances with probably stagflation, recessions, and the geopolitical situation, everything's looking rather dour. So this is ugly. I don't see it getting better for a while.
Well, Brent, it's interesting because even though we've had bad cycles before, in this particular one, the valuations of some of the companies that have banked success, where they've actually gone out and developed, let's say, a million ounce, 2 million ounce, 3 million ounce deposit, there's a few dozen of these companies, and some of them are actually trading for less market cap than some of the exploration plays and the grassroots drill plays. And it seems like even if they go out and do massive drill programs, some of them have drilled up 50,000, 80,000 meters of drill core and put out even further results, and it doesn't seem to be moving the market in any way. Do you think that the end game for some of these is more consolidation in the space? Do you think we'll see some M&A where some of the big boys come in and pick up some of these projects, or would this be a sector that you would just stay away from for the immediate term?
I'm making a list, checking it twice, of projects and companies that I think are real valuable. I'm not really buying anything now because I think it gets much worse. I think, we're tied to the major markets now and they're headed south. And when they're headed south, no one's going to buy a junior exploration company or a development store or even a mining company. So we're all headed south. That's, my personal opinion. And the problem, you're right. When companies are putting out news and drill holes, it's very, very rare that they go up on the news, regardless of how good it is. And in terms of companies with ounces or pounds in the ground, all that tells you when they put out a pre-feasibility or a bunch of drill holes is, geez, they're going to need more money going down the road here. So it's people are selling on that sort of news based on, one, the sector sucks, the market sucks, and they're burning through money, and there's not much hope of them getting more down the road, at least at a reasonable price. So I think that's kind of where we're sitting right now. And I remember back in 98, 99, you could buy solid exploration companies with 10, 12, 15 million bucks in the bank for 70% of the cash in the bank. And I think we're going to get there.
For some stocks, we're already there. They are trading for cash in the bank. Brent, one argument I keep on hearing from companies is that why would we keep on exploring when we're not getting any value for those ounces? We should go out and further acquire companies that have ounces in the ground. What do you think actually moves the needle in terms of ounces in the ground, though? Because quite frankly, a million ounce resource, it got a lot of attention 10, 15 years ago. Now it seems like every company has somewhere around a million ounces.
Yeah, the problem with most of those million ounces is they're pretty marginal. It is really difficult to find an economic, you know, high margin deposit in gold or silver or copper, et cetera. And that's what's being realized now as well. That's why we're not seeing near as much M&A activity as people expect, is that these major companies, they go through the data in detail. And most of your economic assessment reports, preliminary economic assessment or pre-feasibilities, and even feasibilities are over-optimistic. And we see that with ones that are getting built and it's costing more, the grades aren't there, the resources not accurate, that sort of thing. And that's another reason we're not seeing a lot of M&A, is that just that given what a pre-feas says a net present value and IRR are, is not always legitimate. When a real company goes through it, they tear it apart and it's usually not as good as that. So that's another reason, I think.
Well, Brent, you've spent your career going on site visits and going out to see these projects, and you usually have made the point in the past that there's all kinds of other information that you glean when you go out on site and realize, hey, this looked good on paper, but ... now that I see this, and that's the same thing that the major companies are saying. Could you maybe speak to that for investors that, you know, view everything through the lens of a corporate presentation or press releases, how important it is, has been in your career to go out on site and actually see the project?
Well, it's been critical. I think pre-COVID, Joe and I visited 33 projects a year in the previous year. Joe's going to one or two projects a month now. And it's really key. Not only do you get to, you know, meet the management and the people actually doing the work and see how well they're doing the work and how focused they are and how it all works together, but you see issues that you don't see in these corporate presentations, which are really just selling documents, right? So, I mean, I remember times going to Columbia, for instance. Nice sounding deposit. But you get there and it's like, dang, there's a beautiful white Catholic church on top of the hill they want is going to have to go away. Or there's instances where this mineralization's in the bottom of a valley that floods every wet season. So they cannot build an open pit mine down there. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of instances where I've gone to a project and seen something that tweaks me, that says this is not going to work. And vice versa, there's projects I've been to that really stand out and look like this is really going to work. So it's critical, particularly in the earlier stage projects, which is what Joe focuses on, and so do I.
Brent, are there any jurisdictions that you are favorable towards right now? Simply because, look, nothing's really getting all that much value, but out of anywhere, I've noticed that Northern Canada, even in Alaska, there's been the odd stock that's bucking the trend. To me, that's not the best, simply because there's so much money that needs to be spent up north, but there are some good drill results to be had. Any jurisdictions that you like, or at least are paying a bit more attention to right now?
Well, I think Nevada is always good. I think Utah's good. I think Arizona, depending on if it's BLM forest or private land, then you've always got to take into consideration water. Is there water? Is there not water? That sort of thing. Mexico has gotten worse. Walking down into South America, Argentina's gotten better. Bolivia has gotten better. The rest have gotten worse. Brazil, I like a lot. I think still West African countries are fair. Scandinavia, Australia. That pretty much covers what I can think of right now in the world.
Well, Brett, yeah, there are some jurisdictions, particularly like what you mentioned with the Scandinavian Finland or what they're doing in West Africa, that seem to trade at a huge discount to the rest of the market, I guess, at the perceived risk. But are there any projects, I guess, anywhere in any jurisdiction that have your attention right now because the management team is on the right track or because the project in particular has your interest?
Well, certainly. I mean, I can tell you things that I own and anticipate buying more of as this collapse continues. One would be Liberty Gold. They've got two gold deposits, heap leach oxide, easy mining, permittable, one in Idaho with about 2 million ounces and one in Utah with 1 million ounces. And they're cashed up. They've got in the order of 25 million US in the bank. So that's the other thing I always look at. Did the company have enough money to last a year or a year and a half? So yeah, that's the one. Arizona Sonora Copper. Nice copper oxide supergene deposit in Arizona. Private land, they own the water, permittable. It's up dip from Robert Friedland's Ivanhoe Electric, which is a $1 billion valuation. That one I like a lot. In Brazil, Ero Copper. That's built, it's operating, they're producing copper at close to $1 a pound. And that stock's gone from, what, 25 bucks to 9 or 10 bucks over the past 6 months. And nothing has changed that much, except they're finding more copper. So yeah, there are some great opportunities out there. It's just a timing issue.
Brent, another quick comment on Arizona Sonora there. Because they are right beside Ivanhoe Electric, they have ounces, pounds in the ground. However, they are such a smaller market cap than Ivanhoe Electric. How do you want to see that story progress here to stand out from Ivanhoe Electric?
Well, I'd like to have them compared to Ivanhoe Electric. I think they just keep working away at it. You know, they're getting drill intersections of 100 meters of 1.2% copper. It's leachable. They've got Rio Tinto in there testing out a new leach recovery system on primary sulfide ore. If that works, they've got a hell of a lot of ore depth. This one's just a matter, it's not that well known. And I think they just keep plugging away. They've got the cash to do it and the grade to do it.
Well, Brent, maybe just one more on exploration companies, since that is a huge focus. And that is, there are some companies that have one clear flagship project. They're putting all of their effort into that. Maybe they have a second project of notice, but they really are focused on this. And then we see another model where some companies, not just prospect generators, but a lot of even exploration companies have 3, 4, 5, 6 projects going, and they're trying to do a little drilling on each one. Is there a preference you have? Do you like to get into those ones that have multiple projects where maybe they hit on one of them and then maybe they get revalued higher than one that's already being looked at for their main project? Or do you like it when they just keep their focus on one main project?
I'm sort of neutral on that idea. I think it really comes down to, one, the quality of the projects and the people, and two, the money they've got to properly evaluate 1, 2, or 3 projects. I mean, one's always going to be a standout. That's where they're drilling. But you know most of these are going to fail eventually, right? I mean, your success rate in exploration is less than 10%, quite a bit less probably. The key is knowing when to quit. And the problem with most of these Canadian companies is they don't know when to quit. They just keep going after it and going after it, even though it's clear, at least to Joe and I, that this is not going to be an economic deposit that anyone's going to want.
So, Brent, I noticed when you were recommending or saying some of the companies that you liked, there's a bit of a copper focus there. We've talked a fair bit, I feel like, about gold here, but are you a bit more focused on copper? Do you see a rosier outlook for that metal?
I do. I do. I think as we come out of this stagflation, recession, whatever it's going to end up being, we don't have enough copper production to meet demand by a long shot. And the issue with large copper deposits is they can take 10 to 20 years from discovery to production. So the ones that are in production or near production or have an easy route to production, I think that's a good place to be. That's a good place to be.
One more on copper then, Brent, and that is there are some projects that have a lot higher grade copper, but they're a lot smaller projects. They may have lower capex to get them built, and maybe they could be a nice bolt-on project. But the other side of the copper equation is some of these are very large bulk tonnage that have huge capex, you know, sometimes in billions of dollars to get them built. Do you like some of those smaller high-grade ones that maybe aren't as massive of projects but actually have a clear path forward, or would you hold out for the big scale in copper projects?
The problem with these big scale copper projects now is that most of them are at depth. So they're not necessarily looking at open pit, but you've got to look at a block cave underground operation. And just the technical studies needed to, you know, say yes, it's a go, take hundreds of millions of dollars for these great big ones. And so that's kind of a problem. I mean, the ones that have been found recently in Ecuador and Chile, Argentina, you know, their market caps got up to $1 billion. But in reality, we're not going to see those into production for, I'd guess, 15 to 25 years. Whereas a company like Arizona Sonora, that could be in production in, I don't know, 2-3 years. And it's not a big one, but it's a decent sized one. Small deposits I tend to avoid because all the problems you've got with a big one, you've got with a small one, but you don't have the tonnage to fix it. And most of the money they make goes right into trying to find more. I'm not sure that I should question, but that's what I was thinking.
So Brent, I guess overall still sounds like this market's in a tough situation. Doesn't sound like you're out there actively buying. How are you managing your portfolio at this time?
Well, I've taken all my tax losses, and I'm continually thinning it down. I mean, Joe in Exploration Insights tries to keep it to 20 companies that he's following, and that's quite a lot. That's the maximum I really would want to follow as well. And the idea is you don't add one unless there's one to get rid of. Always trying to upgrade the portfolio. And if a company doesn't have the cash to make it for a year and a half, I'm hesitant to hold on to it. So that's sort of how I've been managing my portfolio.
Okay, that wraps up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope you all enjoyed this weekend show. And as always, please go back to our website or podcast and go through all of our daily editorials. As always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email, either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.